Hello, I'm Sunny Morrison, and this is number 0273, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0273. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, actor Patrick Duffy, best known as Bobby Ewing on Dallas, talks about the online petition that's growing in order to save the show and is surprised at the recent cancellation.
I was dismayed because I thought we were doing a really good show. I don't think we were. I know we were. And I assumed erroneously that we had at least one more year because the ratings were doing well enough on TNT. So, you know, when you mentioned that, you know, I'm working hard to save the show, I think the work that I did and everybody else did was the work on Tampa. The work now is being done by the fan base, which is totally astounding to me.
Legendary actor Theodore Bacall talks about his 75 years in show business. Was he upset that he didn't get to play Captain Von Trapp in the film version of The Sound of Music, a role that he originated on Broadway?
For 5 minutes, I was upset about that, naturally. But frankly, it wasn't in the cards, because on stage, the star of the play was Mary Martin, and she was exactly 10 years older than I, which on the stage you could get away with. There was no way that she could play this role in the movie. And since they couldn't take her, they couldn't take me. You're not politics.
Joe Hewitt is the author of Trivia for Adults.
I love trivia. I can't seem to quit writing them and looking at them. And I much prefer a trivia that has to do with other than modern music, movies, rock groups, things like that, rather science, geography, history, those kind of things that I think are more for thinking adults.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0273 was Sunny Morrison from the HR department at Global Montreal, the other place that I work. And thank you very much, Sonny, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A man who robbed 4 Subway restaurants in 4 days with a gun claims he did it because he was mad that the Jared diet didn't work for him. 18-year-old Zachary Torrance was arrested in Hueytown by police after someone saw surveillance videos on the Hueytown Police Department's Facebook page and recognized Torrance from having witnessed him purchase a gun holster at a Walmart. Now, police say he was even wearing the same clothing and shoes as the suspect was the day of the robbery. Now, according to Police Chief Chuck Hagler, he stated in the course of his interview that he had tried the Jared diet and it hadn't worked for him like he thought it should have. He was trying to get his money back. Torrance has confessed to the crime and will be facing sentencing. He is currently being held with a $250,000 bail. Okay, so he believes everything verbatim that he sees in advertising, apparently. I'd hate to see how ballistic he might go when he discovers that geckos don't actually talk, or for that matter, have a British accent. Anyway, there are some benefits to drinking alcohol. Moderate amounts can be good for your health. Immoderate amounts can give you a warm, fuzzy feeling of fraternity with the whole human race. But there are disadvantages too, not the least of which is doing really stupid things when pulled over by the police. A 40-year-old man is facing multiple charges after New York State police say he tried to eat his DWI test results. Yeah. Troopers say Kenneth DeZorms of Greenwich, Connecticut was stopped for speeding at around 5:30 in the morning. After speaking with him, the troopers determined he was intoxicated and arrested him. Kenneth was transported by the state police to the barracks and processed. Troopers say when his breathalyzer test results were printed, Kenneth grabbed the paperwork and tried to eat it. He is charged with driving while intoxicated, obstructing governmental administration, and criminal tampering. You know, if I were the cops, I would just keep printing copies to see how many of them he would try to eat. That would be a whole lot of fiber in that diet, don't you think? Yeah. An Egyptian bus driver who tried to fool a drug test by using his wife's urine ended up being told he was pregnant. Public Transportation Authority officials said they became suspicious when the male driver's urine tested positive for pregnancy, and they confronted the man and asked him to verify the sample was his own urine. The man confirmed ownership of the sample, leading officials to respond, "Congratulations, you're pregnant." The driver admitted the urine came from his wife and said he was not aware that she was 2 months pregnant. The Public Transportation Authority said an investigation into the incident is underway. Officials said they will avoid repeat incidents by requiring blood samples for drug tests. So, the bus driver has some explaining to do, and perhaps so does his wife. Anyway, moving right along, angry taxpayers and retail customers sometimes protest their debt by paying the bill with containers of coins, especially pennies. But what if a company did that to a customer? A court has ruled that Adriana's Insurance Services in Rancho Cucamonga, California, had unjustifiably ejected and assaulted 74-year-old Andres Carrasco from its offices when he complained about a canceled policy and ordered Adriana's to pay him about $21,000. Consequently, in August, the still irate company dropped off at least 16 buckets full of coins at the customer's lawyer's office. Well, it is still currency, so fair is fair, I guess. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, an Italian man who bought a new Fiat to help him get to work on time took an axe to the vehicle when it failed to start. 34-year-old accountant Spartaco Capone purchased the Fiat 500 because public transportation was making him consistently late for work. But he turned against the vehicle when it failed to start at his home, making him late again. Police said Capone attacked the car with a pickaxe, filling the body with holes, hundreds of holes in the vehicle's body. And normally, in incidents like this, it's not people smashing up their own car, but he was able to prove it was his, said a police spokesperson. We think he must have been under a lot of stress at work lately, and he was taken to hospital where doctors helped to calm him down and are keeping him in for tests. The car was declared totaled, and Capone is receiving psychiatric care at a local hospital where doctors said he would benefit from a few days of relaxation. Yes, but wouldn't that make him even later for work? Isn't this a stress-inducing catch-22, huh? Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Fans of the television series Dallas were happy when the long-running nighttime soap was rebooted a couple of years ago on TNT in the U.S. and on Bravo here in Canada. But after a 3-season run, the series was canceled. However, there is a groundswell of fan support that is trying to get TNT to change its mind and allow Dallas back for a 4th season on the air. A Save Dallas petition is on the website causes.org. It's not only the fans that are trying to save it, so are the show's stars, including Bobby Ewing himself. And joining us on the line right now is the man who plays Bobby Ewing, Patrick Duffy. Hi, Patrick.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. You're working hard to save this television show, which I have to say right off the bat, the reboot has been a lot of fun to watch. And I know a lot of people who have enjoyed it, love tweeting about it, talking about it online. Were you surprised when the 3rd season came to an end and TNT said, we're pulling the plug?
Well, it's not my first day at the picnic here. So I was a little dismayed, not surprised. I've seen things like this happen. I've been on both sides of this equation a lot. So I know that business decisions are made for a various number of reasons, a lot of which we as actors and fans don't know. But I was dismayed because I thought we were doing a really good show. I don't think we were. I know we were. I'm proud of every single episode. And I assumed erroneously that we had at least one more year because the ratings were doing well enough on TNT. So, you know, when you mentioned that, you know, I'm working hard to save the show, I think the work that I did and everybody else did was the work on Canva. We worked as hard as we could to make that show as well crafted a television show as we could possibly do. That was our real work. The work now is being done by the fan base, which is totally astounding to me. And I'm here, you know, as I have been this morning, to express my gratitude more than anything for the not just the exuberance, but the heartfelt effort that people are making to at least let their voices be heard, their desires to be recognized. And TNT, in my most blue sky scenario, will probably not renew the show once they've canceled it. But apparently there are a few other doors that are slightly ajar. And, you know, if something like this can have an effect, then I am just so grateful for the efforts that they've all made.
Well, it's interesting that you say other doors, because I know that the networks, when they do the ratings, they look at people who watch the show when it airs, and also in the first week because a lot of people have DVRs. And I know I'm guilty of this myself, because I'm a person who, when it came to the new version of Dallas, I liked to binge watch. I like to accumulate three or four episodes and watch them all at a time. And maybe I didn't show up in the ratings because of something like that. And I'm saying that because maybe a place like Netflix is where Dallas belongs.
Well, interestingly enough, Dallas can be watched on Netflix now. In other words, the already shot episodes, Netflix made a deal, and they are available on Netflix. And that's part of the complication of finding a new home for Dallas, as far as what I've been told, is that there are so many ancillary deals in place that it's not just a matter of popping onto a new network or a cable venue, but the legal ramifications of carrying a deal from Netflix to a new place, or the worldwide syndication rights and who owns what and how to divvy up the pie, makes it extremely difficult. And I think that's part of the big hurdle of getting the show picked up at another venue.
I think what you guys have managed to do in the three seasons you've been on is something that is rarely done, and that is to reboot a successful show in a fresh new way that honors both the characters that were on the original and brings in new blood at the same time. I think it would have been very easy, as it has been done on some shows in the past, to take some of the, shall we say, older characters, and make them just figureheads, as opposed to real characters that are part of the plot of each and every episode, which Dallas has done.
Well, Dallas did it, and the reason Dallas did it is because of the writer and producer, Cynthia Sidra. And when we were first meeting with her prior to signing on to do the show, Larry and Linda and I read the first script that she wrote, and we were ready to do the show. Had a meeting with her, and you know, the first thing she and Mike Robbins said was, you're not just going to be wheeled out for a Christmas special. You know, you're going to be integral to the show and to the plots and to the carrying over episode after episode. And she realized that was the success of Dallas originally, is that everybody has a part to play in it. And it was one of the few reboots that honored that tradition. And they felt, I hate to say the word honored, but they felt very privileged to be a part of a continuing epic that 13 years of Dallas made it. And we were proud. I mean, let's just say, and I'm not even putting it out there as a possibility that it may never be done again, but it is so rare to get 16 years of any television show in this era. And we've had 16 years now of Dallas. I think we have the potential to do more, but that's really out of the actors' hands, and it's really up in those upper offices of other places. But the fans are being heard. I do know that. The efforts that these literally tens and hundreds of thousands of fans have made is not going unrecognized or unappreciated. Appreciated by the actors and recognized by the suits that make those decisions.
I'm assuming at the very best what would happen is that you would have the opportunity to have another season of Dallas on the air somewhere. But if that doesn't work out, is there the possibility that there could be a Dallas movie to wrap up storylines for those who have followed for the last 3 years?
I would assume that that's a possibility. I would, and I know that most of the actors, if they're not committed to something new by the time, you know, it would have been canceled, would sign on to do it because we love working together. So, yeah, we left a lot of things dangling because of the mistake of thinking that we're going to come back for another season. The cliffhanger this year was quite extraordinary, and it, you know, it leaves a gaping hole in a lot of people's continuum if we don't do something. Hell, I'll even do a stage play. Let's just tour the country.
If the show comes back, we're not going to start off the season with Bobby in the shower, are we?
I think you can only play that card one time, and I think we did it. And I'm so grateful we did, because I got 5 more years of Dallas with my best friends. But no, I think they would literally just start right where we left off with that amazing explosion and what's going to happen. You know, was it real? You know, was Christopher in the car? All of those questions have to be answered and should be answered, in my opinion. But if not, it'll be like a Sopranos demise where everybody will have their opinion as to what happened and perhaps we'll never know.
Now I know you can't tell us this, nor you should if you know the answer, but when cliffhangers take place, like the one that took place just recently with the hopes of a fourth season, do you, as the crew and the actors, do you know where that cliffhanger is going should that show come back, or is it a mystery to you as well?
It's a mystery to us, and quite honestly, I prefer it that way. I don't like being the holder of secrets. I didn't know who shot JR until it aired. And none of the cast members know how this explosion is going to be resolved. And at a lot of times, and I know this for a fact in the early Dallas, even the writers and producers didn't know what they were going to do the following season. But they knew they had 3 to 4 months to hash out the storylines and take everything into consideration. So, No, I don't believe, other than Cynthia Sidra and possibly Mike Robin, really know absolutely how they planned and hopefully still plan on resolving the explosion and the different things. There was even a sister of John Ross dangled out there. So there's a lot of things. I would like to know the resolution to them myself.
One of the things I found interesting with your character this year is Bobby's always been the good guy, but we got to see shades of gray with Bobby. And of course, with those shades of gray were the consequences of those shades of gray. Has it been a fresh new way of seeing Bobby for yourself as the person who's portrayed him all these years?
To me, this was, if anything, the 3 years, and if that's all there is, it's great. If not, even greater. But it was nice to see Bobby mature into a completely well-rounded person. And by well-rounded, I mean to see the nicks and scrapes and warts that all human beings have. He was so idealistic, you know, in the first incarnation. And now, Bobby, we started the new series. Bobby was celebrating, I believe, his 60th birthday or 61st birthday or something like that. And he was the patriarch of the family, which allowed me to be, as a character, a lot more patient, but also a lot more human, realizing that idealism has its place, but also you have to do what you have to do. And those were fun things to play around the edges of. We all knew, Cynthia, you know, told me right at the beginning, Bobby has to maintain a certain box of moral certitude. And I knew that too. But within that box, the plot lines of the last 2 seasons, and especially after the character of JR died, what Bobby had to do was a lot of fun to play and was a much more well-rounded person. And I knew I was never going to, you know, fulfill the JR type of quote-unquote bad guy character. That was up to John Ross Jr. and Josh Henderson, which he did brilliantly. But my job was to, you know, to do whatever was necessary to maintain family, and a lot of times it was not as pretty as Bobby might like to have done, and that was fun to do.
Well, we hope the drive to keep the show on the air in some way, shape, or form is successful. People can go to the website, causes.org, to sign that petition. And I wish you luck in whatever you do. I hope it is Bobby Ewing, but if that's not the case and there's something else down the pipe that we can see you on, we'd look forward to that, too. I thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Peter, it's my pleasure, and thank you for your continued enthusiasm. It's really a pleasure to know that everybody like that is out there. Thank you.
Patrick Duffy, best known as Bobby Ewing on Dallas. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0273, and you'll find links to the causes.org petition and also links to Patrick's website.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the legendary actor Theodore Bacall. Plus, we'll meet the author of Trivia for Adults. And, of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day and lots more Stuff File news on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio. That's Stuff File news right here, right now. Well, 28-year-old Amanda Collins took beauty pageant mom to the next level. And by the way, when I say the next level, I'm talking the next level down. She did that earlier this year when she entered her daughter Luna in Britain's UK Princess and Prince International, based entirely on Luna's ultrasound scan at age 20 weeks. Said Collins, "As soon as I saw her image on the screen, I knew she was a stunner." Contest officials had accepted the scan application, and 6 weeks after Luna's birth, she was runner-up in the Princess and Prince, and on top of that, 4 weeks later, runner-up in Miss Dreams UK. "All she has to do," says Collins, "is lie in my arms and smile as I stroll down the catwalk." Wow. Oh my God. What is this world coming to? And by the way, I've seen pictures of this baby. She is not a stunner, I'm sorry. She looks like Winston Churchill. Have all these people gone mad? Wow. Anyway, moving right along. A gang kidnapped a man in Edmonton years ago, beating him and accusing him of stealing 2 pounds of marijuana. The gang's leader shot the man's dog to death and threatened to do the same to him, but they finally dropped him off at a hospital for treatment for his severe injuries. Most of the gang was rounded up by police, and they never got the mid-level drug dealer who led them. Benjamin Lewis Young, who was 33 years old at the time, was on Canada's most wanted list for years. Police found that Young had been hiding the entire time in the basement of his house and just never bothered to look there, even though the gang held the victim there overnight. Now, when they finally checked there, they found and arrested him. He quite literally lived in the basement of his home for 17 years, said his lawyer. His wife worked to support the family, and Young was a stay-at-home dad. Well, yeah, of course. Young, who is now 52, has to face the charges filed against him 17 years ago. I knew someday I'd have to give my pound of flesh, he said. He was sentenced to 3 years after pleading guilty to extortion, assault causing bodily harm, and killing an animal all back in 1995. Okay, the cops really couldn't have been looking all that hard, could they? I mean, and he was a stay-at-home dad. Over the years, didn't the kids ever wonder why Dad never left the basement? Never mind, left the house? Never left the basement? Yikes. Anyway, Ashley Tull's dog ruined her daughter's backpack. The 30-year-old Tull gave her daughter another backpack and dropped her off at daycare in Selbyville, Delaware. When the 4-year-old girl opened the backpack, she discovered 249 little bags of what she thought were temporary tattoos and candy left over from a recent party at her house. So she started handing the packets out to her classmates. An employee noticed the packets and reported them to the daycare's owner, Alicia Johnson. Johnson then took the items to the Selbyville police. She asked them if they could tell her what it was. Police quickly identified the contents as heroin. Tull was taken into custody, charged with maintaining a drug property plus 3 counts of child endangering. What, only 3? Thankfully, none of the children ingested any of the drugs. See? Taking candy from a baby isn't always a bad thing. Yeah. And police in Michigan said an alleged drunk driver pulled into the county jail parking lot and thought she had arrived at another bar. The Van Buren County Sheriff's Office said the 39-year-old Hartford woman, whose name was not released, pulled into the county jail parking lot just after 2 a.m. Sunday and was seen trying to convince her boyfriend to get back into the vehicle. Deputies say the woman smelled heavily of alcohol, and a breathalyzer test indicated her blood level alcohol content was more than twice the legal limit of 0.08. Police said the woman admitted to investigators she had been out drinking at a bar, and she had believed the parking lot was for another bar. The sheriff's office said the woman is expected to face drunken driving-related charges. Well, you know, it's always nice for the police officers when crime comes to them. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Britain's The Guardian reported in October that repairing the fashion holes in earlobes is one of the fastest-growing cosmetic procedures in the UK as millennial generation radicals tire of their half- to three-quarter-inch see-through lobes. Have you ever seen those things? They look painful, and in the winter, they look cold. Anyway, doctors charge up to $3,000 to remove the entire area around the hole, originally created by stretching the tissue, and connect the healthy parts back so they fuse together. A Hawaiian man, not currently a patient, supposedly has the largest ear hole, nearly 4 inches in diameter. Okay, folks, admittedly, didn't y'all see this coming eventually? You know, I thought at least some people might have gotten even more creative with their earlobe holes. How about adorning the opening with stained glass? Wouldn't that be neat? Or a little gyroscope. An actual working gyroscope. Who knows? Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff All program, shall we? Theodore Bekel is a true Renaissance man. He's had an illustrious career as an actor that has spanned 75 years, conquering stage, film, literature, and music. The Oscar-nominated, Emmy-winning actor is also the driving force behind the theatrical release of Theodore Bekel in the Shoes of Sholem Aleichem. And there is also his memoir, simply entitled Theo, an Autobiography. Theodore Bekel joins us on the line right now from California. Hello, sir.
Hi.
It is a pleasure and an honor to have a chance to talk with you. I don't even know where to begin. You have done so much. So let me start by asking you, is there anything in your career that you haven't done that you still want to?
No, I haven't done ballet, and I don't want to do it because I'm not good at it.
Excellent. Fair enough. I have to mention one of the things you're also known for is you've done shows like Fiddler on the Roof. You've done it both on Broadway. You've done it in a touring company. I actually saw you perform in Fiddler on the Roof when you came to Montreal several years ago. So I want to ask a question about performing both on Broadway and both on tour. Are the audiences different?
Yes. They are and they are not. It depends what you're looking for. If you're looking for the audience reaction, do they react to the same things? Do they laugh at the same places? And are they moved by the same portions of a play? They're alike. They're different because regional differences become evident. There are some people in the South laugh at different places and laugh louder and laugh harder and longer. Jewish audiences tend to laugh at different places, again, because of the familiarity of things, especially when you're talking about a show like Fiddler. So there are differences in when the ethnic makeup of the audience is predominantly Jewish, for example. I could tell, when I was doing Fiddler, I could tell within the first 8 minutes of the play what percentage of the audience is Jewish.
With a career that as I said, has spanned 75 years, when you first started acting, did you have a vision or a goal or an idea of where your career has gone? In other words, have you been surprised by the directions your career has taken you in the last 75 years?
Thankfully, yes, I have been surprised. I just set out to be a good performer, a good singer, a good conversationalist, an intellectual, a well-read person. I later branched out into places, and of course I'm also a liberal. I come from a socialist home, and my involvement with labor unions and with left-wing politics followed naturally from that. As a human being, I was involved in causes. As a performer, I branched out into all of the aspects of performing. I started with the theater, which is the most important medium there is. But then I did movies and I did television, and they each of them demand a different attitude and different technique. And I'm glad to say that I was able to master them to a degree of professionalism and proficiency that proved to be right.
You mentioned that theater is to you is the most important, and you then transitioned into films. Now, one of the things that you are known for is you also originated the role of Captain Von Trapp on Broadway. I've had the opportunity to talk to some other actors about this as well. I'm just curious to know how you feel about the fact that the opportunity didn't come your way to play that in the film.
I really was, for 5 minutes, I was upset about that, naturally. Yeah. But frankly, it wasn't in the cards, because on stage, the star of the play was Mary Martin, and she was exactly 10 years older than I, which on the stage you can get away with. There was no way that she could play this role in the movie. And since they couldn't take her, they couldn't take me. They're not politic.
You also mentioned the fact that you are politically active as well. And I'm just wondering, especially in this day and age of social media, how would things be different as far as you're concerned? I mean, you've involved yourself in many causes over the years, many controversial causes that sometimes, having a certain notoriety, a certain public forum can be helpful to somebody's getting their point or view across, it could also be damaging to one's own career. Were you ever concerned, being so politically active, that it might hurt you as an actor?
No, I was never concerned. I you follow your beliefs wherever they lead you, and consequences be damned. You cannot play games with your own intellectual honesty, and you cannot withdraw. For example, if you see injustices and you fight them, and you tread on some toes fighting those injustices, your career may suffer. But I would be not true to myself if I would desist from entering the fight.
I want to talk a little bit about the theatrical release, Theodore Bekele, In the Shoes of Sholem Malekum. This is a person you're very, very familiar with, having played one of his characters for many, many years. Tell us about this particular film.
Well, my life and the life of Sholem Malekum intersect on so many levels. In the beginning, of course, when I was a boy, my father read Sholem Malekum around the dinner table regularly in Yiddish, and we had 36 volumes of collected works on our bookshelves. Then the Nazis came, and in short order we became refugees, and they confiscated everything we owned, including the books. I tell of this in the film as well, and we had to leave with one suitcase each, and what hurt us most was to have to leave the books behind. And my grandmother actually liberated the books from the clutches of the Nazis by sitting in the anteroom of that warehouse where they were being kept, the warehouse that was marked the enemies of a property of the enemies of the Third Reich. And she wept, she cried. And until that Gauleiter, the Gauleiter in charge of that place, said to one of his minions, "Get that old Jewish woman out of my sight. I don't want to see her anymore. I'll sign off on anything she wants. Just get her out of here." And he did, and she liberated our things. And after heavy payment, they were shipped to us. By that time, we were in Israel, but Palestine. It was then in Tel Aviv. And it arrived in Tel Aviv with swastikas plastered all over the container. And we had them. We had them. And then the books traveled on. And then after my father died, I shipped them to Amherst, Massachusetts. Yiddish books were well cared and cared for in that place. And then when I started working on my play and on my film about Sholem Aleichem, I needed them, and I called Amherst, and they sent me the same set of books. So books have legs.
Yes. And it certainly has a very strong history, not only just in history, but within your family as well.
Oh, yes. My father spoke Yiddish. He also spoke brilliantly, spoke Hebrew. And with my mother, I spoke German. We were a polyglot family.
The amazing career you've had, I also touch on the fact that you have your autobiography out, Theo, an autobiography. Is it kind of cathartic to look back at your life and put it down on the page?
It was interesting to write the autobiography, and wasn't very difficult. I wrote in dressing rooms, I wrote in on trains, on planes. The only thing that I had trouble with was dates. I frankly had to look myself up to find out what came before what. Other than that, I remember times and I remember places, I remember events, I remember people, but I couldn't remember the sequence of them very well. But luckily, in this day and age, the data is kept somewhere.
Well, the legacy of the work that you have put out so far, and I say so far because I'm sure there's more to come, is just absolutely amazing. And I thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk with us on the program.
Thank you for talking to me. I'm looking forward for the movie to be shown in Canada. That's really my next wish and desire, because Canada has always been kind to me, and I'd like to be kind to Canada.
Well, you know, we appreciate all that you've done, too, so thank you very much. Actor Theodore Bekele. The movie is Theodore Bekele in the Shoes of Sholem Aleichem, and his memoir is Theo, an Autobiography. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0273, and you'll find the links to Theodore Bekele's sites, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Animated video games are so realistic today that game makers now have to pay college athletes when characters in their games look like the real-life athlete. Even if a player's name isn't used, courts have ruled that if the likeness of a character is close enough to a real athlete, the athlete must be paid. So, can a company that makes video war games be sued for how it uses the likeness of a real-life military dictator? This actually happened when the former Panamanian dictator, Manuel Noriega, sued the makers of the Call of Duty video game. Even though Noriega was convicted of drug trafficking and killing political opponents, he demanded payment for the use of his likeness and argued that the video game damaged his reputation. Let's be fair, this lawsuit could have had a very disturbing ending, but an American judge has dismissed the case. By denying payment and saying Noriega failed to prove his reputation was harmed, the judge has scored a victory for common sense. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. In the interest of time, kindly hold your applause until the entire program is over.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Trivia for Adults. Plus, we do indeed have an Idiot of the Day coming your way and more Stuff File news here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, the family of Kai Halvorsen of Norway were planning a holiday in Thailand, and they feared that their bulldog, Igor, would be traumatized, having never been left alone. Kai and a friend arranged with Laban Kennel to make a replica of the family living room to calm Igor's anxiety. The two men painted the walls the same shade of gray, brought in the family couch, built a replica coffee table, and moved in Igor's bed, carpet, pillows, and blankets. However, according to the friend, Igor spent much of the holiday cavorting outside with his new friend Helga, the Saint Bernard. Yeah, pet owners. They never really do go too far, do they? No. And when Miami Beach, Florida police detective Reynaldo Casas tested positive for cocaine, he was fired. But Casas filed a grievance, having never knowingly used cocaine. He said he was baffled, perplexed, and confused. And during arbitration, Casas testified that a friend had given him a cream to enhance his male performance. The friend testified that he had received the cream as a gift from an old Cuban guy. The cream was applied directly to the underperforming organ and worked, but both the friend and Casas said they didn't realize it contained cocaine. And while the city called Casas' story incredible and said he should have known what he was applying to his body, the arbitrator disagreed and Casas was reinstated with full back pay. Well, if it tingles, you must know it's working, huh? And by the way, if you have an erection lasting more than 4 days, please call your doctor, or in this case, Tony Montana. Let's get to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? There is a new book out called Trivia for Adults. Now, before your mind goes off on the wrong tangent, this isn't a book that is kinky or X-rated. It's just a trivia book for thinking adults regarding science, history, geography, and some sports. The author is Joe Hewitt, and Joe joins us on the line right now from Texas. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Glad to be with you.
Right off the bat, why did you create a trivia book called Trivia for Adults?
Well, I love trivia. I can't seem to quit writing them and looking at them. And I much prefer a trivia that has to do with other than modern music, movies, rock groups, things like that, rather science, geography, history, those kind of things that I think are more for thinking adults.
Okay.
I hope I don't insult the teenagers.
So give us an example. What do you consider the thinking person's trivia?
Well, let me just give you a little example here. Who is the American industrialist who was recognized as the father of the production assembly line?
Would that be Henry Ford?
Yes, Henry Ford. And I think most adults would know that. However, it might make you think a little bit. During the Civil War, U.S. currency was... Oh, here, I gave the answer. okay.
What was the question, now that you've piqued our interest?
The question is, when was the U.S. currency first called greenbacks?
Okay, so you did answer that question. Okay, so
yeah,
let me ask you this then.
The Civil War, yeah.
Let me ask you then. It was during the Civil War. Why was it called greenbacks? Was it just merely because of its color?
Yes, because that's the first money that they minted or that they printed that was had the green back on it.
Okay.
There had been a great variety of different colors up until that time. And here's another good one. Where are the days and nights always the same with 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of darkness?
Would that be the autumnal and vernal equinox?
The equator.
Oh, the okay. Okay, place. I thought you said time. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But there's a lot, you know, a lot of things. I consider those things for adults rather than just, you know, the things that a lot of people ask are what rock group did this or that. And maybe it's because I don't know anything about that kind of thing, but I do much have much more interest in other things other than that.
Well, how did you first get interested in writing trivia books?
Well, just relatively recently, I have been writing all my life, well, most of my life. I started out as a newspaper reporter in 1957. I was a reporter for the Lima, Ohio News in Lima, Ohio, and I was a police reporter, courthouse reporter. Then I was editor and a national and international news editor and slot man on the city desk, and I have been writing ever since. And later on, I was called into the ministry, and I pastored churches for 39 years, but I still continue to write. I wrote curriculum for Sunday school teachers and newspaper columns, travel articles, things like that, and a couple of nonfiction books. And then lately, I'm actually in my third lifetime. After I retired from the pastorate in 2001, I started training as a professional mediator, and I mediate court cases now for a court-appointed mediator to settle court cases. So writing has just been a passion of mine and interest most of my life, and so the trivia just kind of fits right in with it.
Now, I've been looking at the press release pertaining to your book, and one of the ones that caught my eye, and I'm curious to know if you have the answer to it. I'm hoping you do, because I'm assuming it's in your book, and that is, when a piece breaks off of a glacier and falls into the sea, what is the glacier said to be doing?
Calving. Calving, like having a calf.
Really?
Like a cow has a calf?
Right.
It's called calving, yes. Uh-huh.
And do we know where that term comes from?
I have no idea, but it's like giving birth. Whenever a big piece of a glacier breaks off, it's like giving birth, which would be much like whenever cells divide or when a cow has a baby.
Interesting. Interesting. So when you first put this book out, what has the response been so far for your trivia book?
People like them. They... then I, the thing they like about them most is that I expound on the answer. I don't just give a bare bones answer to the question. For example, when did Friday the 13th be first considered to be unlucky?
And when was that?
Most books would just give a simple answer, like Friday, October the 13th, 1307. Others might just give an answer, Friday, October the 13th, 1307, when the Knights Templar were massacred. But I go ahead and give the details where that it was that date, Friday the 13th, October the 13th, 1307, when the King Philip of France ordered the Knights Templar to be arrested. They were tortured, accused of heresy, and killed. And it was with the blessing of Pope Clement. And it seems a coincidence that both the Vatican and the Kingdom of France were deeply in debt to the Knights Templar. Well, when they were killed off, they kind of canceled the debt. So this has been an unlucky day ever since. Or people consider it an unlucky day. I don't. But they consider it an unlucky day because of that tragedy that took place then. So I expound on the answer. I don't just give a very brief answer. If I need to, I feel like I need to, I go ahead and explain something. So if a person wants to read this book, they can kind of refresh their memory on things that they already know, and they may learn something, or they may learn a little bit more details about something like that, for example.
One of the things about trivia is it's like eating peanuts or potato chips. You can never just stop with only one. So have you decided, or are you going to write further follow-ups to Trivia for Adults?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I write about one a day, one little question or so a day. You know, it takes as much time to write one trivia question and answer as it does two or three pages of a novel. So it's a very time-consuming thing. It's really, my wife, who is also a novelist, she tells me you should spend your time writing novels because it takes too long to write this trivia stuff. But the trivia stuff's a lot of fun.
It is indeed. The book is called Trivia for Adults. It's written by Joe Hewitt. Joe, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
All right. My pleasure.
Joe Hewitt, author of Trivia for Adults. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0273, and you'll find links to Joe's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Got another Stuff File news story that I want to share with you before we get to our idiot of the day. Brad Culpepper played defensive tackle for 9 NFL seasons and, not surprisingly, applied for disability when he retired since his medical folder listed 14 MRIs, head and knee trauma, and neurological and vision problems, which resulted in doctors declaring him 89% disabled and the Fairmount Premier Insurance Company giving him a $175,000 settlement. Now, Fairmount sued recently to get its money back, claiming that Culpepper is and was exquisitely fit, as evidenced by a September 2013 Tampa Bay Times feature on his gym workouts, and in his having earned a martial arts black belt, and in his participation for 14 days in the grueling TV series Survivor, Blood vs. Water, in 2013. Okay, I almost made this medical moron the idiot of the day because, really, if you're going to claim medical disabilities and you were on a pro team as an athlete, prone to garnering a certain amount of attention, it kind of behooves you to stay out of print or out of TV doing athletic things that most of us can only dream of. I mean, that's just common sense. But I didn't make him an idiot because clearly many people are implicated here, including doctors and lawyers. So let's just label him a medical moron and move on from there. But this, boys and girls, this next story, this is your idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
When someone tagged a photo of Monica Hargrove on Facebook, the online service popped up a notification to the woman who didn't like it one bit. It was unflattering to her, she thought. She called a person who posted it to complain, a detective at the Columbus, Ohio Police Department. It was a wanted poster. The detective offered to take the photo down if the 34-year-old woman came in to talk with him. Sure enough, she went to the police headquarters, where she was promptly arrested on charges of robbery, aggravated robbery, and kidnapping. True to the detective's word, the photo was taken off Facebook. Oh, wow. Now, why, oh why, would someone contact the police department to ask them to take down an unflattering wanted poster of them on Facebook? I mean, seriously, how ignorantly vain do you have to be? I can think of one reason, and one reason only, as to why she would actually go down to the police department to complain about a wanted poster. And that reason? She's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0273. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0273. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.